Hey folks, if you haven't tried Audible yet, what are you waiting on? You've heard me talk about it for a while now. Audible offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre, from bestsellers to mysteries and thrillers, true crime and more. Audible is the home of storytelling. You'll discover thousands of podcasts from popular favorites to exclusive new series. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. But members also get full access to a growing selection of included audiobooks, Audible originals, and podcasts, and you can download or stream those included titles all you want. And the Audible app is great. Makes it very easy to listen anytime, anywhere, whether you're traveling, working out, walking the dog, or just doing your chores. Right now, I'm listening to a thriller titled Then She Was Gone by Lisa Jewell. It's absolutely amazing. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/TCAT or text TCAT to 500-500. That's audible.com/TCATT or text TCAT to 500-500. Everyone, and welcome to episode 120 of the True Crime All the Time podcast. I'm Mike Ferguson, and with me, as always, is my partner in true crime, Mike Gibson. Gibby, how are you?
I'm doing very good. Thank you very much.
Thank yous. I'm just one guy. You don't have to go full Cousin Vinny on me.
No, it's just all right, man. Hope you're doing good, twos.
Yes, twos.
Yes.
The yous and the twos.
That's absolutely.
No, I'm doing great, man.
That's good.
So we released a Patreon episode last week.
Yes, it did.
Got some good feedback from it.
It's a good episode.
Why are you talking like that?
I don't know.
All right, cut it out.
That was a good episode, man.
It was. No, people seem to like it. We got some great feedback from it. So speaking of Patreon, let's do our Patreon shout out.
Let's do it.
We had Wayne and Julie Hodge.
Hey, Wayne, Julie.
Tracy Ravoy.
Ooh, Tracy.
Lindsay King up to our highest level.
Thanks, Lindsay.
Amber Scott.
Thank you, Amber.
Monica Garor.
Garor.
I don't know how we settled on that.
We'll go Garor.
Brittany Romalo.
Hey, Brittany Romano.
Romalo.
Romalo.
You keep wanting to
like call, Malo, like those little cookies you can buy with the marshmallow in them? Malo? No? I've got that look like, what are you talking about?
You talking about the ones that look like Reese's Cups?
Yeah.
But there's marshmallow inside?
Yeah.
You called them cookies. They're not cookies.
Oh, they look like cookies.
No, they don't. They look exactly like Reese cups, except for instead of peanut butter, there's a bunch of marshmallows.
So they're like a candy bar then.
I guess.
But not a bar.
They're definitely not a cookie.
They're a sweet.
They're sweet. Lisa Klosick.
Hey, Lisa.
Bob Garrett.
Thanks, Bob.
Christine Solange.
Solange, I like that.
Stacy Kittredge jumped out at her highest level.
Hey, thanks, Stacy.
Sam Perejko.
Perejko.
Ciaran Corbett.
Hey, Ciaran.
A lot of names that sound familiar from criminology.
Yeah.
A lot of people supporting all of
jumping
our shows.
Jumping over around. Good.
I appreciate that. Christine Hernandez.
Hey, Christine.
Frederick Blake.
Hey, Frederick.
Christopher Austin.
Thanks, Christopher.
Amy Levesque.
Ooh, Levesque.
That's a fun name to say.
Yeah.
Kristen Menace.
She's not tiny, but she's a menace.
Ashley Whitehead.
Hey, Ashley.
Sue Kelly jumped up. Past our highest level.
Well, with a double first name, what else do you expect?
You got to do it. Sure. And then last but not least, Candace Zugich.
Zugich? The Zugich. I wonder if they call her a Zug for short.
The Zug?
Zug maybe. In the house.
I love nicknames, man.
Yeah.
And then if we go back into the vault, Gibbs. This week we selected Valerie Power.
Hey, Valerie.
Longtime supporter.
Yeah, she's VP.
She's a VP. She's got it all going on, man.
Well, she's been with us since early stages, man.
Early stages.
So we appreciate that.
We appreciate all the new Patreon support, the continued support. We had some great PayPal support as well. Yvonne in the UK.
Hey, Yvonne.
Michelle Milam.
Milam?
I don't know.
MM?
MM. Terrence Schwab.
Hey, Terrence.
It's a rich family.
I know, the Schwabs.
The Schwabs.
Yeah.
Andre Chobani.
Ooh, Chobani, like yogurt?
Kinda.
Yeah, there's a rich family.
Jennifer Warmuth.
Hey, Jennifer.
And Derek Paff.
Paff?
Mm-hmm.
Don't paff around, buddy.
I had to think about it. It's PF. How would you say that? PFAFF. Faff or Paff?
Faff.
One of those has got to be silent.
Faffay?
Parfait. How do you get parfait out of that?
I don't know.
One of those has to be silent.
One of them.
It's kind of a pick your poison type of thing. All right, Gibbs. So on True Crime All the Time Unsolved, right now we have out the fourth and final part of our series on the West Memphis 3 case, the murders of Stevie Branch, Michael Moore, and Chris Byers.
Yes.
I think it's really good. I think people are going to like it. I know 4 episodes is a lot for us to do on anything. This case is just so freaking massive.
We knew going into it was going to be at least 3.
Yeah.
So.
And then once we got there, there's no way it could be 3.
No, not for us to do it the way we want to do it.
Yeah. So check that out.
Definitely good.
Crime Con badges. Don't forget, if you're buying them, use Crime All the Time 19. That's our promo code.
Meet us down there. Grab a bonnet.
A bonnet.
Or whatever they're called.
It's like a John Benet. It's a beignet.
Oh, beignet.
Beignet.
Hey, meet us and just have a beignet.
I've gotten a lot on the beignet talk. There's a lot of people saying, you know, hey, just make your own using like the pastries that you buy and you just roll them out and then you do this, this, and this.
Oh, but I don't want to have to.
And that may be true. I'm not discounting that fact, but yeah. I'm telling you, there's nothing like the ones at Cafe Du Monde. There's just nothing like
it. So it's a go-to. We're definitely going there.
Oh, it's... I mean,
no
it's
choice.
Historic. It's it's old. It's just amazing.
It's smelly.
No.
No.
Smells like chicory coffee and beignets is what it smells like.
It's like heaven for you, isn't it?
Yeah, I love it.
Are you going to wear your little outfit?
My little outfit.
You know what I'm talking about.
I don't know. No. I don't have a special beignet outfit, if that's what you're asking.
No, your furry outfit.
No. Why would you need a furry outfit to sit and eat in beignets and drink coffee?
I didn't know why we were there for Crime Con, if there was like a little mini furry convention going on at the same time. Never know with you.
But let's just assume there's not.
Let's hope
not. At all times.
Yeah.
All right, Gibbs, you ready to get into this episode of True Crime All the Time?
I am. Let's do it.
Let's do it, brother. We're talking about Mark Gudeau, the baseline killer. And we actually got some help from this episode. Very much appreciated from Kelly Hurst and Tina Horn.
Yeah.
They provided us with some research material, all kinds of stuff. Backup. It was great.
Thank you, ladies.
So big shout out has to go out to them. And I know they spent a long time working on it.
Yeah.
Every time somebody helps us out with a case, the one thing that everybody comes away with is, wow, I had no idea how hard it was to... gather,
yeah,
put, you know, this all together in kind of a format.
Yeah, you got to research it, take it all in, and figure out how you're going to spit it back out.
Yep. But we appreciate it. So we are in the Phoenix, Arizona area for this case, and we're talking about one of the most notorious serial killers in Arizona history. So we go back to 2005-2006 time frame. Phoenix had a big problem, Gibbs. Actually, they had 2 big problems.
Yeah, they did.
They had 2 different serial killers running around on the loose, caused the deaths of at least 17 people over what was about a 16-month time frame.
Not a good time to be someone that lived in that area.
No, it was scary for everyone. Yeah. Now, that's the number of people that lost their lives, but there were many more. Especially in the case that we're going to talk about, that were injured, assaulted, sexually assaulted, robbed. So they had a serial killer that they had named the serial shooter. Basically, because this person was a sniper driving around the city, shooting people out of his car window. That's pretty damn scary.
It is scary, man.
Random targets.
This kind of reminds me of the DC sniper.
A little bit. You know, and it came out over time that most of the victims that this person was targeting, A lot of street people, right? Because they're driving around, so they're naturally going to be shooting people on the street.
Right.
There were some transients, some homeless people, some sex workers, but then you just had Joe Smith, who just happened to be walking down the street at night.
At the wrong time.
Or Mary Smith or whoever. The second one, and like I said, the one that we'll be talking about in this episode, was the Baseline Killer.
Yeah.
This is a man that grabbed women off the street, committed a number of robberies, sexual assaults, murdered at least 9 people, had a habit of striking at nighttime, also had a habit of shooting people in the head. That was kind of his MO.
Kind of ruthless.
Yeah, very. So by the summer of 2006, you know, both of these serial killers operating, neither had been caught. It's all over the news. Like we said, the city of Phoenix was living in fear.
Well, yeah, I can't even imagine. You know, you just didn't know what was going to happen when you went around the corner from your house.
Probably a lot of people didn't want to leave their house, especially at night. So the police created 2 different task forces, had hundreds of officers working on each one. But they got some relief in August of 2006. That's when police identified and arrested 2 men, Sam Dedeman and Dale Hosner, as the serial shooters. So it turned out to be 2 different guys that were driving around shooting people.
Right.
There was actually a 3rd man who would also be connected to the case. I'm not sure that he actually fired any of the shots that killed anybody, but he was part of it.
Still has some form of responsibility to it.
Yeah, he was responsible for something.
And I'm sure we'll cover this in greater detail in a future podcast.
I'm telling you, these 2 cases are somewhat intertwined. Number one, they happened in the same area. Number two, they overlapped in time frame somewhat. So you can't help really, in researching the Baseline Killer, to stumble upon this serial shooting case. I think it could make for a whole episode. There is a lot out there. They murdered a lot of people. But they have these 3 guys. They have the 2 shooters. But the Baseline Killer is still out there, right? Summer of 2006. That was not the original name for this person. Because he started out as the Baseline Rapist. You know, this was after Phoenix police made an announcement that a light-skinned African-American male was sexually assaulting females at gunpoint near Baseline Road. Some of these victims, Gibbs, as young as 12 years old.
That's pretty damn young.
No, it really is. But it's important to talk about, right? This person started out being a serial rapist, very reminiscent of the Golden State Killer, graduated to murder later on. Now, this person didn't take it out that far in time.
No.
His crimes happen, you know, much quicker in a much shorter time span.
Definitely going to ramp up.
Than GSK. But that's also how you get the name Baseline. Right, whether it was Baseline Rapist, Baseline Killer later on, it's because a lot of these crimes were occurring on and around this Baseline Road.
Exactly, yeah, just in that small geographical location.
He became known as the Baseline Killer in the spring of 2006 after investigators began to link what by that time was already a series of murders and armed robberies to the rapist. So now it's just one big case that they were calling the Baseline Killer. And it would take them a little bit, but police eventually connect the murders and the assaults and all of it to a man named Mark Goudeau. So as we often do, let's talk about Mark a little bit. He was born September 6, 1964 in Phoenix, Arizona. The youngest of 14 children.
Man, 14 kids.
To have 13 brothers and sisters? And you're the youngest.
And you're the youngest one. So that's like having all a bunch of extra mommies and daddies, man. Because they're going to tell you what you can and can't do.
Oh, okay. I was thinking more along the lines of you're the youngest, you're the smallest, you're having to fight and scrap for your food. You're constantly being kicked around and your siblings are probably using you as a punching bag at times.
Well, definitely screwed on the Baker dozen. You still don't get yours.
No, because you're one out.
Yeah, it's just not right. 14, man. That's ooh.
His father, Willie, worked at a car dealership. His mother, Alberta, worked as a maid. And I imagine, Gibbs, it took every bit that they made at these jobs to support 14 kids.
I mean, if you're working at a car lot as an attendant and you're a maid, absolutely. They probably didn't have steak every night.
No, and there was no, you know, there was no extra toys. There was no, let's go to the ice cream shop. You're not going to have that.
And you think of being the youngest, too. Imagine what the hand-me-downs look like.
Yeah, but you got a lot to choose from.
You had a lot to choose from. But by the time you got it, I would say it was very worn, very comfortable.
And God forbid you're a husky boy.
Why'd you have to bring husky into it?
So funny, somebody sent me an email the other day. They were ordering something for their son.
Yeah.
And I don't know what site it was or what company, but at the bottom, there was two options.
Right.
Regular and husky.
Husky.
So they circled the husky and emailed that to me because they got a big kick out of it.
I don't know. I used to be the husky boy.
We know you did. But his parents fought a lot. It was a fairly dysfunctional home.
Maybe because it's the 14th.
Well, yeah, money's tight.
Yeah.
It's going to be rough.
Yeah.
I think it always is in that situation. Add on top of that, Willie was said to have been verbally abusive. He had issues with alcoholism.
No, that's not good.
It's not a good combination. And he was very strict on the 14 children.
Like, I can kind of see, well, it depends what very strict is.
Yeah.
I can see where you need to be kind of, I want to say organized or have some type of structure with that many kids.
I got the sense that this was more than structure. This was more than, hey, we need to be organized because this is, you know, we got these two paychecks and everything's got to last. I got the sense that he was overly...
More like, this is my house, you're going to do what I want.
Yeah, strict, domineering, you know, doled out the whippings. That's what I
got. Kind of like when I come here, you're like, this is my house, this is my studio, here's your wooden chair, sit down.
Oh, geez, you piece.
Here's my used mic, you get to have that.
Bend over and take your whipping.
Well, I don't even know why you had to go there.
If you're going to go the wooden chair route.
Yeah.
Then
the wooden chair alone is bad enough.
But Alberta died in 1976. So Mark would have been around 12 years old. He moved in with his older sister.
Which, you know, if he's the youngest and she's, I mean, that could be a pretty good span of age.
Yeah, obviously it would take us 20 minutes to talk about all his brothers and sisters and their ages and all that. But she could be in her 30s for all we know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, easily.
But he lived with his older sister. He went to high school in Tempe, Arizona. He was good at sports. He was good at football, played on the school football team. But he never graduated. Didn't have enough credits. Think he was better at sports than he was at academics, which a lot of us were.
Yeah, I was saying. Must have been that time when you didn't have to worry about carrying a certain GPA to play.
Or... like in my case, it always seemed like the coach was the English teacher So
you did.
If you were a good enough athlete, you got special treatment.
You did okay during your season time.
And I wasn't even that great of an athlete.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Well, all you had to do is walk in with your singlet on.
That's it.
And then you
look
get
at me.
A++ and you're off to the next class.
Yeah. I don't know why he kept me after class every time, though.
I don't know why you thought you had to wear tights in the classroom.
I just thought it was what I had to do. I just followed my instructions.
You were just wearing the required uniform.
Well, he showed me all the different moves that you can do.
Tights. So Mark's not going to go on to college, right? Didn't graduate high school. He worked at various jobs. He got into construction. But one thing about Mark Goudeau, and you're going to hear this from different periods of his life, he was a popular guy. People liked him.
Which is surprising.
He was a likable person.
Yeah.
Neighbors.
Co-workers?
Yeah.
They all did.
They said he was a hard worker. Now, it came out that he had some issues with alcohol and cocaine. And later on, he's going to blame a lot of his crimes, murders, everything on substance abuse.
Well, I mean, he had a dad that had a alcohol problem. And then, I mean, he did grow up through the big cocaine era.
As did you.
I know.
You didn't turn out to be a...
That's why I have no nasal hair left.
Serial killer.
That you know of. Because I'm a good guy, too.
You are a good guy.
Yeah.
But we'll talk about it a little bit later as we get further in time about what it means to be a good guy if you're a serial killer. But I do want to, Gibbs, talk a little bit about some of Mark Gudeau's early crimes. They're kind of substantial. In 1982, he was arrested along with one of his brothers for raping a young woman.
That's a kind of a big deal.
It's a huge deal. They were never charged because the victim at a certain point decided that she didn't want to press charges. She didn't want to go through with it. We talked about that on, I think, on the last episode.
Yeah, that happens a lot. And I think
it's tough. It's tough for a victim.
They don't want to relive it.
I know. You know, you're asking a lot from somebody that has already gone through something extremely traumatic to say, okay, now I need you to tell me everything that happened, but also be willing to stand up in a court of law with this person that just did this to you and tell 12 people.
And know that they're going to probably come back and say that you're lying or that you provoked it.
Or you have character flaws.
Exactly.
It, you know, again, I don't want to get too much into our system. It's a good system, but I think that's asking a lot of victims.
Well, on that case, for sure.
I don't know how you get around it, but it is asking a lot. Then in 1985, actually, on his 20th birthday, he abducted a 22-year-old woman.
Because that's what you do on your birthday, is go out and take somebody hostage.
At gunpoint.
At gunpoint.
This was in Phoenix. He forced her to another location where he raped her. And then he fled on foot, but not until after he made her drive them both back to where he originally abducted her. Now, this is a very interesting case, and they had his DNA. They didn't know what DNA was, right, back then. They couldn't do anything with what they had.
Right.
But they had evidence that years later would result in DNA, but it wouldn't be until 2013, well after all these crimes that we're going to talk about, the trials, everything, that Gudeau was linked to this 1985 sexual assault. And again, by that time, he's already in prison. He's the baseline killer. There's no secret. We've already said he's the guy.
Right.
And the statute of limitations had expired.
And that's what always bugs me about all these rape kits that are in these trailers everywhere.
Yeah, you've talked about that before.
They just don't have the money to process them. But you know, by the time they do, that, depending on where they're at, I mean, it just might even matter.
Well, I will say at a certain point in time, I don't know what year, Arizona changed that. They removed the statute of limitations altogether from sexual assaults, which I absolutely agree with.
Sure.
I don't think there should be an expiration on a heinous sexual assault. If you did it, you did it, yeah, and you should have to pay for it.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%.
So they couldn't make him pay for it. It's not going to matter, right? This guy never getting out of prison.
Yeah, he's not going anywhere.
But by the same token, if they had that DNA technology in 1985, maybe he's put away. Maybe he never has a chance to commit all these murders. Yeah. I mean, it's a maybe, but it's kind of a neither here nor there because the technology just didn't exist.
Yeah, I mean, you couldn't use it, so there was no way for it to happen.
So I said they removed the statute of limitations, but it didn't apply to any cases that came before it. So that's the reason why they couldn't do anything with him. Now, they were able to tell this victim's family that, hey, we know it was him. There's nothing we can do. Hopefully that gives you some closure.
Yeah.
And I think it did, probably. They know that this guy is never getting out of prison. He was charged with trespassing in 1987, driving under the influence the year after that. In 89, he was charged with abducting a woman, brutally raping her, and savagely beating her with a shotgun and a barbell.
What the heck, man?
It's brutal.
It's very brutal.
Then, when confronted by police, Gibbs, he tried to say that she had willingly given him oral sex and that the rape and assault was actually committed by two other men.
Okay. She wanted to go down on me. Then I was done. And these two strangers came up and raped her. Wasn't me.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what he tried to say. Gotcha. This was very tough for police to believe because he had also chased away a couple of witnesses with the shotgun. So they were pretty sure it was him.
Yeah.
They said, hey, this is the guy that chased me. Why is he chasing me with a gun? Because I just saw him sexually assaulting this woman.
Right.
If he didn't do it.
Exactly.
And I know he did because I just witnessed it with my own two eyeballs. Before he was even sentenced for this 1989 sexual assault, he got arrested again for robbing a supermarket. So you're getting ready to go on trial, but while you're out, let's say on bail,
yeah,
why don't you go ahead and rob a supermarket?
Even though your attorney probably said, why don't you lay low?
Yeah, just stay in the house. Don't go anywhere. Yeah. So all in all, when it was all said and done, he got 21 years, of which he served 13 and a half.
Of course.
Hey, now 14 years in prison, that's no joke.
That's some real time.
It's real time.
Yeah.
Highly justified. It's not the normal 5 years suspended sentence, 2 years probation. But look at this guy's rap sheet already. He's racked up, you know, some serious damage.
I mean, that's a lot for someone that's just barely 25.
Yeah. Yeah. He had amassed quite a record. So he served, you know, almost 14 years, was paroled in 2004. As part of his release, he was required to submit DNA samples. And that's important, right? Because this case, in part, is going to hinge on DNA. All right, Gibbs, let's take a quick break to talk about our sponsor, BetterHelp. If anyone out there has anything that's interfering with their happiness or is preventing them from achieving their goals, BetterHelp Online Counseling is there for you. They offer licensed professional counselors who are specialized in issues such as depression, anxiety, family conflicts, and so much more. You can connect with a professional counselor in a safe and private online environment. It's unbelievably convenient, and anything you share is confidential, and you can do it at your own time and at your own pace. They have secure video and phone sessions, plus chat and text options. And if you're not happy with your counselor, you can request a new one at any time for no additional charge. But best of all, it's a truly affordable option. And TCAT listeners get 10% off your first month by going to betterhelp.com/TCAT. So why not get started today? Go to betterhelp.com/TCAT. All you have to do is fill out a questionnaire. That helps them assess your needs, but also helps them match you with a counselor you will love. That's betterhelp.com/TCAT. And then, Gibbs, we want to tell everyone about a new podcast from Parcast called Crimes of Passion. We have talked about this so many times, Gibbs. Love. Sometimes it can be deadly. You know, you look at a lot of couples around you in your lives and you think, man, they look really happy. But we don't always know what happens behind closed doors. So every week, the Parcast Network's new podcast, Crimes of Passion, looks into what happens when true love meets true crime. Crimes of Passion analyzes the relationship dynamics and the psychology that leads to betrayal, crimes, and even murder. But sometimes it takes being betrayed by someone you love to discover the true monster inside them. New episodes of Crimes of Passion come out every Wednesday. You can listen to the first episode out right now. It's on Wilma Hoyt. And look for upcoming episodes on Amy Fisher and Joey Buttafuoco. Yuko, Lorena Bobbitt, and Jodi Arias. So search for and subscribe to Crimes of Passion wherever you listen to podcasts. Again, search Crimes of Passion or visit parcast.com/passion to listen right now. Now we get into the first sexual assault attributed to what was first known as the Baseline Rapist. This happened on August 6, 2005. He committed another sexual assault later that month. There's so many crimes, Gibbs, in this story committed by the Baseline Rapist, the Baseline Killer. There's no way that you and I can go into detail about all of them. We really won't even be able to dive into the victims as much as we normally like to.
Just too many.
There's too many victims. And that it's sad because you and I kind of hang our hat on trying to get out as much information as we can on the victims. I'm just putting it out up front. We're not going to be able to do it.
No.
We will talk about some of the crimes and murders that lead to his arrest.
Some key ones.
I hate to say that some are more key than others, but obviously they are when it comes to his arrest and his prosecution.
Evidence and things like that.
So on September 9th, a 19-year-old exotic dancer named Georgia Thompson was found with a gunshot wound to the head. I mentioned it. This is kind of his MO. He shot women in the head. Police recovered a cartridge casing at the scene. That's going to be important.
Yeah.
For ballistics. This was the Baseline Killer's first murder.
And that was his thing. He like you said, he shot him in the head, but he also liked to get in their face. He was the type of guy that when, even before the murders, even on the sexual assaults, he would get into their face and be very verbally abusive. So he was definitely one of those just over the top, you know, angry type of guy.
He was extremely violent.
Yeah.
Very volatile. There were a large number of sexual assaults and robberies attributed to the Baseline Killer that occurred in September and November of that first year, 2005. But one that occurred in September 20th, is particularly significant. Goudreau attacked two sisters, one who was pregnant, while they were walking home from a water park. He first attempted to sexually assault the younger sister, the one that was not pregnant. And the way that I understood it, Gibbs, was that as he was trying to do this, in order to do this, he had to put his gun down. And when he did, this girl grabbed it. But she could not figure out how to fire the weapon. My assumption is it probably had a safety or it needed to be cocked. I don't know. I didn't get the specifics.
Right.
There was something about the gun that she didn't know that she needed to do to make it fire. But she did get a hold of it. And at one point, her and her sister and Goudreau are wrestling with this gun. Now, he's finally able to get it back. And it's said that he pointed the gun at the pregnant sister's belly and he told her to beg for her life.
And her baby's life.
Yeah. And the life of her unborn child. I mean, we are talking about a very sick bastard here. Make no mistake about it. But in a move that I think was somewhat strange for him, you know, this thing did not go his way. He was not very successful in what he wanted to do. I almost hate to use the term successful. It didn't work out the way he wanted it to work out. But he made the decision to let these two girls go.
Yeah.
Even though they had seen his face, you know. But he did something very strange. Before he let them go, he made them both spit in his hand. He took their spit that was now together in his hand. He mixed it with dirt. And then he rubbed it on the younger sister's breast. Because, and this will all come out later, he was trying to cover up DNA that he had left on her breast during the sexual assault. His saliva, and he knew it, was on her breast from obviously things that he did during the assault. He thought this would
eliminate it,
completely make it impossible for anybody to figure out it was him.
You figure just zero it out, huh?
Yeah. You just, like, you're just mixing it all up. No way they're going to be able to tell it was me. It's pretty tricky. I don't know that I've ever heard of anybody doing that.
If it actually would have worked.
Yeah, the problem is it didn't work because it's going to be that DNA later on that is really going to connect Godot to this crime. And we'll talk about it more, later on. In December of 2005, 39-year-old Tina Washington was found shot in the head behind a fast food restaurant. This murder is significant for the fact that a piece of her jewelry is going to be crucial later on in the case of Mark Godot. I almost hate the way I'm saying this, Gibbs. They're all significant. But again, for the sake of time, we can only talk about certain ones in any amount of detail.
Yeah, and I would say Tina's is maybe her evidence is the one that puts the nail in the coffin.
Yeah, and I think that's true. And we'll detail out what that is later on. But so many more robberies, sexual assaults, and murders in 2005 and into 2006. A woman was assaulted in front of her daughter by Godot and then forced to drive the car as her daughter was assaulted.
Oh, man, that's terrible.
In February 2006, Romelia Vargas and Myrna Roman were found dead, both shot in the head in their lunch truck. So they made food.
Yeah.
In a truck, and right. That's where they were found dead.
One of those truck deliveries that went door to door to businesses.
Yeah, well,
the old Roach Coach.
No, those are great, man. Lunch trucks are the best.
Oh, man.
I'm sure some are not as clean as others, but
I remember those in my UPS days.
Some of the best food I've ever had has been from a truck.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of it's been at 2 o'clock at night after the bar closed, so it may not have actually been as good as I thought.
You thought that was a taco. Who knows what you ate?
But again, I know we're not talking about the victims as much as we like, but these are all people with families. None of these people had done anything wrong.
No, they never got to live to their potential, and who knows what they could have done in life.
Sure. Now, the next month, so March 2006, George Chow, it's not his real first name, but everybody called him George.
Yeah.
His first name was kind of like Chow. I don't know how you pronounce it, but I really didn't want to say Chow Chow.
Which you just did.
I just did.
But you're right. Why would you want to say chow chow? Yeah. That's a southern relish anyway.
Is it?
Yeah. Chow chow.
I never heard of it. So we'll call him George because I think a lot of people did call him George.
Right.
And Liliana Cabrera.
Ooh, Cabrera.
They worked together at a restaurant. George was going to give her a ride home, but they were abducted at gunpoint as they got into their car behind the restaurant. They were both killed, and their bodies were found within a mile of each other.
I'm almost convinced if you're taken by gunpoint to act right then.
So it's funny that you say that because, I have a habit of watching YouTube videos. Sometimes I get on a streak where I can't stop watching them. Last night I was watching one. I was watching some of my road rage videos, but one came up that was about self-defense. And they were using a real shooting caught on CCTV or something. What happened was this guy was carrying, two guys came up on him, and one of them pulled a gun. This guy that was carrying, as soon as he saw the gun, he pulled his. But that's when he got shot. So this instructor, was actually an instructor on the YouTube video, was saying, and I think the term is you can't pull from the drop. Meaning, this guy acted too soon.
Right.
He needed to wait for his
opportunity time. Yeah.
Is what he was saying. Not to get into too much gun talk, but it kind of made me think of that when you said, I do understand what you're saying, because you and I have talked about this a little bit on other episodes. And I know there are statistics, and we don't have them in front of us or anything like that, that say, I believe what they say is you're better off if you're forced into a car or something like that, fighting your way out, I think.
Yeah.
I hate to give out bad information, but I think I've seen some stats like that.
I think the beginning part is critical. If you can avoid getting in a car, I think you're probably better off.
Yeah.
But again, you know, I'm no expert.
Well, and every situation is different because you don't know what the person is thinking.
Yeah.
But again, the key is, do you want to take that chance?
Well, I certainly don't want to drive somewhere private with them.
No. Chow is the only male victim of the Baseline Killer. My assumption is, Gibbs, he was not the intended target. I don't think if he was alone that the Baseline Killer would have gone after him.
Just a casualty of the hunt?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. Christina Gibbons was a known sex worker. She was found dead, stuffed in between a building and a shed, like an object.
Yeah. Let me just toss this over here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Literally stuffed, like wedged, is the way that I took it. Then you get into April. Sophie Nunez was shot in the head in her bathtub. This is a very sad story because it's her 8-year-old son, Gilbert, that finds her a few hours later. An 8-year-old finding his mother shot to death in the bathtub.
How horrific would that be?
Yeah, it's very disturbing. Obviously, that's going to affect somebody for the rest of their life. No doubt about it. Scarred. But police didn't connect this one to the Baseline Killer for several months. But I think, Gibbs, what's extremely significant about this murder is Sophie Nunez was the only victim of the Baseline Killer that had a connection to Mark Goudeau.
Yeah, because Mark did some handyman work on her house.
He did. He did. He actually, I think, met her at a bar at some point. I think he had a crush on her.
Well, I think phone records probably prove that.
Yeah. If eventually they're going to get a hold of his phone records and find out that he called her a bunch of times. And Sophie had a daughter, a teenage daughter, that would later say, after seeing a picture of Mark Goudeau, obviously his picture is going to be splashed all over the place, she recognized him. She had actually seen him at the mall when she was with her mom. Her mom said hi to him. They talked for a little while. I think he called her so many times, he wanted her to go out with him. The daughter even has backed this up, that her mom told her this. He asked her out a lot. She shot him down. There was something about him, her mother said, that she didn't trust. She didn't want to go out with him. Police did find some DNA at the murder scene that would later be tied to Mark Goudeau. And then let's talk about the last known homicide of the Baseline Killer. It actually happened on my birthday, June 29th, 2006. A woman named Carmen Miranda was talking to her boyfriend on the phone. It was around 9:30 p.m. She was at a car wash using the big vacuum to vacuum out her car.
Yeah, the super vac.
The super vac, which is what I do too. Drive down, put 4 quarters in the machine and
suck away.
You get a lot of suction that way. Those vacuums are very powerful.
You would know.
But this is what this woman's doing that night. She's on the phone with her boyfriend when she told him that there was a man walking up to her. And in her words, she said he looked like a panhandler. Somebody begging for money or is going to ask for money. Then all of a sudden, Gibbs, she screamed and the call dropped.
That would be the worst.
That would be the absolute worst. If I'm talking to my wife,
yeah,
and she screams and now I can't get a hold of her, the phone is dead, I'm in full flight panic mode.
Yeah, man, just a nightmare.
And one thing that's important is this panhandler angle, because it's been said that Goudeau, in carrying out his crimes, he often acted like a panhandler or someone that was homeless.
He'd wear different wigs and hats.
Oh, he did all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, he definitely
disguises.
Tried to look different each time.
But I do think a lot of the time he was trying to make himself look
as a man in need.
Yes. Like he was going to come up and ask for something. Police found Miranda's body a few hours later. She had been shot right between her eyes. You always hear about that, Gibbs, but in movies usually.
Yeah.
You don't hear about that in a lot of serial killer cases.
This is brutal, man.
Somebody being shot right between the eyes.
Brutal.
The other thing about it was that her pants were unbuttoned. This was also something that occurred in quite a few of the murder scenes. Female victim shot in the head, and their pants were either unbuttoned and or pulled down slightly.
Yeah.
But something huge comes out of this murder, and it's that police discover the car wash had video surveillance, and their suspect was captured on it. It's pretty big in a case like this where you have a city that's in total panic. I'm sure a lot of pressure to try to catch this guy. You have a task force, all of that. Authorities released the footage to the media in the hopes that somebody would recognize this person. And what you see on the video is an African-American male wearing what looks to me, Gibbs, like the type of hat that Gilligan wore on Gilligan's Island.
Okay.
Like a bucket hat looking thing. There are dreadlocks coming out of the hat. And you can see this man, he grabs Miranda, forces her into the car, and then drives off. So they have the video. From the video, they come up with a composite sketch. Now, at some point, the police had at least one false confession that we know of. It was a man by the name of James Dwayne Mullins. He's not confessing to everything. He confessed specifically to the murder of Georgia Thompson, the 19-year-old exotic dancer that happened back in September of 2005. Mullins told police he shot Thompson after she tried to rob him outside the strip club where she worked. The problem that police had with it was her body wasn't found anywhere near the strip club. And in their investigation, they didn't feel like she was killed and then transported to where she was found. They were pretty sure she was killed right where she was found. So they weren't believing Mullins when he tried to confess. And Gibbs, he pretty quickly changed his story after the police definitively linked that killing to the baseline killer.
They said, all right, this is getting too real now.
Yeah, I don't want to be the baseline killer.
Yeah, I was okay with one, but I don't want all these other ones attached to
it. For whatever reason, I want to take credit for this one. I still don't understand that, but I think we actually did get a voicemail the other day that talked about, from one of our really good listeners, that talked about, you know, could it be that some of these people, they just don't want to be on the street anymore. They want three hots and a cot.
Yeah.
And they want some of that stability that they can't get themselves on the outside. It was interesting because I never really thought about it. You know, I always think of false confessions usually in the terms of, you know, a Jesse Miss Kelly Jr., a Brendan Dassey.
Right.
If you consider those false confessions. But, you know, someone that is either maybe not that bright and has been led down a path by police to say something that really didn't happen. That's kind of the way I've always looked at it. But that makes a lot of sense, actually, as to why maybe some people might confess to a crime that they didn't actually commit.
Well, that's true. Maybe they're just more comfortable being in that environment instead of being out with the general public.
Well, maybe they've already been in prison. Maybe it's a Shawshank Redemption thing.
Yeah.
Where they don't want to be on the outside, but they let them out. Who knows? There's a lot of reasons for why people do what they do.
You're saying they could be a Brooks, huh?
Could be a Brooks. That's a good pull, too, by the way.
You like that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I know you thought about it for a little bit.
It hurt. Could you see the pain?
There was smoke coming out of your left ear. So like I said, this Mullins guy, he didn't want to be the baseline killer. And then I think later on, it came out that he wasn't even in Arizona. Or he told police he wasn't even in Arizona. And then pretty much after that, he's denied all involvement in the death of Georgia Thompson. You know, my wife and I, we both use Rakuten when we shop online to help save money. My wife uses it more than I do because, well, let's face it, she shops more than I do. Rakuten is the most rewarding way to shop and save because members earn cash back on everything that they buy. Rakuten is a shopping platform that partners with over 3,500 stores across every category. You're already shopping at your favorite stores. Why not save while doing it? It really is a no-brainer. I use it for all my techie stuff at stores like Best Buy. My wife uses it at stores like Sephora and Macy's. Best of all, membership is free and it's easy to sign up. It's very easy to use. Cashback rates change daily. So start all your shopping at Rakuten.com or get the Rakuten app to start saving today. Your cash back really adds up. True Crime All the Time is sponsored by BetterHelp. I want to ask everybody one question. How is your social battery right now? Does it have a ton of energy or are you drained? And why is it at that level? You know, it can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin. What's the right amount of socializing for you and how do you recharge? You know, maybe you're the type of person who thrives around people or maybe you need some more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. I think therapy is a very powerful tool for learning positive coping skills and helping to empower you to be the best version of yourself. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. No more hopping in the car, driving, and sitting in a waiting room. You can do your entire session from the comfort of your own home. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/TCAT today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/TCATT. So by the summer of 2006, this task force that we talked about, Gibbs, they had compiled a list of more than 100 convicted sex offenders who lived in the general vicinity of where the baseline killer operated.
That's a lot, man.
That's over 100.
But you know what? It's probably the norm in today's world.
Well, I'll tell you what. I get those emails because I'm signed up for one of those services that tells me when a registered sex offender has either moved in, moved out. I am always alarmed by the map that comes up.
Yeah.
That shows me how many registered sex offenders are in a certain radius. It is somewhat alarming. But you're right, 100 convicted sex offenders living in this small little area, they're getting a lot of tips, but they're not able to identify the person in the composite sketch. They're not able to figure out who the baseline killer is.
Well, they're going to turn it up then. They're going to, instead of just thinking about sexual offenders, they're going to start looking at any ex-con in that vicinity.
Sure, sure. I mean, there's a couple of things. I mean, right, by this time, they had linked all of the murders to the same person ballistically. That was really the link, right? It was the ballistics from the gun, the shell casings that were left at the scene. There was $100,000 reward out for information leading to the capture of the killer. By August of 2006, based on what you just said, right? Convicted offenders that were out on the street, not just sex offenders, but you know, people that had been to prison, they sent a list of 75 potential baseline suspects to the state crime lab. They weren't all ex-cons, but 30 of them were, 30 of the 75, and those 30 all had their DNA profiles available in the state database. One of the convicts, or ex-convicts, if you want to call him that, on that list was Mark Goodeau. And we mentioned it, right? As part of his release, part of his parole.
He had to leave some DNA behind.
Yep. He was in the database for sure. But, and I mentioned it earlier, Gibbs, when we were talking about the attacks involving the two sisters, one who was pregnant, that eventually police were able to figure out the DNA collected from one of the sisters came from Goodeau. And this led to him being arrested on September 6, 2006. It was his 42nd birthday. They arrested him as he got out of his truck at his house that he shared with his wife, Wendy, he was charged with 2 counts each of aggravated assault, sexual assault, and kidnapping in connection with the 2005 incident involving these two sisters. At the time he was arrested, Goudeau was working for a concrete company. He had been in construction pretty much most of his life when he wasn't in prison, but this company did jobs all over Phoenix, some of which were very close to where many of the baseline murders had occurred. So they got him, right?
Yeah.
He's charged. He's going to go to trial, but not as the baseline killer for sexually assaulting, kidnapping these two sisters. But the police are looking at him. And I think the thought was, Gibbs, he's going to go away. They're going to convict him. We can build our case. We being the prosecutors can build our case for the other baseline crimes, the murders, before taking it to the grand jury, because we know that this guy is going to be locked up.
Yeah, they got time on their side.
Sure.
And then they don't have the urgency because they know nobody else is going to be getting hurt because they know where he's at.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's absolutely right. Now, police searched Goudeau's house 3 different times. And they found some items that linked him to crimes believed to be committed by the baseline killer. They found some jewelry that belonged to victims. In one of the searches, detectives were focusing on white and black footwear. And this came out through earlier interviews with some of the assault and robbery victims about, you know, what their attacker was wearing. So they took some of his tennis shoes from his house. They did some forensic testing on it, and it revealed DNA from 2 of the murder victims was still on his sneakers. And it was said that it was pretty apparent to the authorities that he had gone through some significant efforts to try to clean these sneakers up.
Maybe using bleach, who knows what, but
yeah.
he definitely tried.
Didn't do enough.
Yeah.
They were still able to find some DNA, particularly on a pair of some white Nike sneakers.
Yeah, I think they found some good DNA points on the, what they call the swoosh, the logo.
Mm-hmm. Or the swoosh.
Or the swoosh.
You call it a swoosh.
Swoosh.
I call it a swoosh.
Depends what side of Ohio you live on.
You and I live on the same side of Ohio.
I live a little further to the other side.
You live north of me, but no, but you're right. They found evidence of DNA that belonged to George Chow, the lone male victim of the baseline killer. And it was in that kind of the emblem area, the Nike swoosh area.
So they also found some other DNA on the sneaker, which belonged to Nicole Gibbons. And she was murdered in late March 2006. A black ski mask was found in the bottom of the hamper. It was also tested, and the testing revealed some microscopic blood in 5 locations. Because remember, he liked to shoot him in the head, close range, so that I say splatter, you probably say spatter.
No, I'll go with you. Most people say correct us and say spatter, but I find either term acceptable.
There you go. But either way, that splatter came back on his mask. And again, it would be identified as Nicole's.
Well, let's talk about that for a minute. If you're going to fire a gun into somebody's head at what is essentially point blank range, it's almost impossible that you're not going to get some of that on you. And one of the things that people always say, especially like in the forensic community, is people just don't realize where that blood lands and how hard it is to really get it all off of you.
Yeah.
I don't know how else to better put that.
So kind of related as far as how you think you can clean something up fairly easy. So back in my UPS days, right, I got done with my route and I went to a little restaurant where you sit at the bar and they serve you the food. It's like an Empire restaurant or something like mm-hmm. that.
Yeah. And let me finish this. I have no idea what this story is.
Yeah.
You ate something you shouldn't have. You got back in the truck and you shat yourself.
No.
No, no. I'm not even close.
Not even close.
Shoot.
No. But that would be dangerous, too.
Yeah, that would be a good story.
That would have been a good story. No, so I got some French fries, and I grabbed the ketchup bottle, and I start to shake it, not realizing the cap was not screwed on. The cap flies off. The ketchup flies out of the bottle, lands on the guy next to me. It has a suit on.
I thought you were going to say it got on your brown, tidy UPS shorts.
End up getting more places than we thought. You know, I thought, well, sorry, I'll pay for your dry cleaning.
Sure.
And I knew the guy from being in there so often. Initially, after he got upset, wore off, right? It was all good. But I remember driving back in my truck again, and I was like, finding ketchup everywhere. You think you got it all. You didn't. Same thing with blood.
I mean, I've heard of people having it inside their ears.
Yeah.
And they had no idea.
That it was sitting there.
And somebody sees it. They swab it. I mean, obviously, you'd have to do that pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But, man, the other story would have been better.
For you.
Because you're talking about things that were hard to clean up. That's what I thought you were going.
You wonder how long I'd drive before I clean myself up.
Well, those packages, they got to get delivered.
Hey, nor rain, nor sleet, nor snow, nor sharpen yourself.
I don't think that's how it goes.
Oh.
Nor.
Well, you got to change my vocabulary, man.
I'm not trying to change your vocabulary. It's a quote. It's a. It's an actual.
Well, this is UPS, not the United States Parcel.
Right. Yeah. But you're using the one from the post office.
I'm stealing it from them.
I can't remember exactly how it goes.
Yeah.
It could be nor. I thought it was like neither.
Neither. Probably is. I was just trying.
Maybe it's neither, and then nor at the end.
Might be.
Neither rain. Or maybe it's neither, and then nor.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Somebody tell us. We got a postal worker out there working for us.
We're off track. I think the important thing, Gibbs, is that they are finding DNA connections between the murder victims and Mark Gudeau.
Yeah, but he's not happy about it because he's saying, hey, my DNA, you guys are trying to frame me. This is a setup. If anything, you should be clearing me of these murders because it's not my DNA.
Yeah, he talked a lot about the police framing him, planting evidence, has continued to claim all along there's nothing linking him to the crime scenes.
But what else are you going to say? You're not going to raise your hand and say, yeah.
No, not if you're smart.
Yeah.
Deny, right? But during one of the searches, and I mentioned there was three, and this happened during the last one, police discovered a pair of brown leather shoes. And inside the shoes, they found a small sandwich bag that contained some items, some of which was jewelry. But the biggest item was a 10-carat gold ring that contained a personalized description that belonged to Tina Washington. Washington had bought the ring from Walmart a few months before she died. And this was a special order. She just didn't go in and, you know, buy this from inside the case because she had it engraved with the names of her three grown sons.
Yeah, very important to her.
So when you talk about it being personalized, not that hard to tell that this was Tina Washington's ring. You know, nobody else in the Phoenix metro area is going to have this 10-carat gold ring with the three names of her sons in it.
Yeah, I mean, so here's the ring that belongs to the murder victim that was shot, but because they don't have the murder weapon, I mean, this is probably the best thing that they can get besides the DNA they have. I mean, this is connecting him, putting him at the scene of the crime.
And it's important because they need all the ammunition they can get, right? All the links. But I will say, there is some controversy surrounding the searches of Gudeau's house. I think mainly centered around the fact that they didn't find the ring until this third and last search.
Well, and I think he's very vocal about it. His defense attorney's vocal about it. His wife's vocal about it.
Oh, yeah, everybody. Now, when I looked at the search warrants, I thought they were very specific. You know, the first focused mainly on tennis shoes. That's what they were looking for. It did list some other items, but the second one really focused on computer and electronic equipment, but it's that third one. It specifically listed Washington's 10-carat gold ring, which police knew by that point must have been taken when she was killed, right? Her family came forward, said, hey, We can't find this ring. She would have been wearing it. But I also think that's why some people have said that they think maybe the police planted it. They were looking for it specifically. And like you said, Mark has said this, his wife has said this, but I'm sure there are other people online that have theorized this as well. So they've put all this evidence together against Mark Goodeau. They charged him with 74 more counts. And he's already facing what, Gibbs? What did I say? 19?
19, yeah.
For just the attack on the two sisters. Now they've charged him with 74 more. 9 of those are murder. So what happened was he essentially had 2 different cases, and they were going to be tried separately. The first case involving the attack on the sisters happened in 2007, and it was on September 7th, Goodeau was convicted of all 19 charges relating to that attack, and the sisters testified during the trial. They said that Mark Goodeau suddenly approached him. He had a gun. He forced them into some nearby bushes, made them remove their clothing. They said that he sexually assaulted the younger sister as he pointed his gun at the other sister's pregnant belly. We talked about that. But the source of the DNA, that was the big thing at this first trial. The prosecution said essentially what we said when we talked about the attack, right? He made the girl spit into his hands, mixed it with dirt, rubbed it on the sister's breast. It's the way that they were able to pull out just his DNA from that mixture,
right,
that the defense had a real issue with. You know, they said it was experimental science.
Sure, unless it would have
exonerated
him. Yeah, and then I guess the best thing ever.
Oh, yeah. The other issue they had with it is they said the state, in doing their testing, they used up all the swabs. There was no evidence left for the defense to test. They did have an issue with that. One important point to make, nothing related to the baseline killer was ever mentioned during this first trial. They didn't want to prejudice the jury because this trial was just about the sexual assault, the kidnapping of these two sisters. He was sentenced on December 14th, 2007 to 438 years in prison, Gibbs, for the sexual assault charges.
It's a long haul, man.
That's a big number. But what I read about it was that the reason why it was so many years, because you and I have covered a lot of cases where we say, man, I can't believe that person only got X.
Yeah. I was really surprised, like you were, you know, researching this, that there was that many years.
Yeah. And the way that I saw it explained was that he tried many times in many different ways to sexually assault these women. And so somehow they were able to differentiate each time, and he was given time for each one somehow.
Yeah. Yes.
I know I'm probably not making great sense.
No, I get what you're saying.
That's how they got to this 438 number. But you look at it and you say, obviously it was a horrific crime, the sexual assault of two women, but when have you ever seen that result in 438 years?
This is one case where the time actually justifies the crime as best as it can. You know what I mean? Am I saying that wrong?
Because it would be the crime justifies the time.
Yeah.
But I got what you were saying.
Yeah, what I'm saying is that at least it's taken very seriously.
Yeah, he didn't get off with the slap on the wrist.
Yes. Yeah.
That's the end of 2007. Goodeau's going away for a long time, but he's going to face another trial, right? The trial for the rest of the baseline killer crimes. But before that happens, in June 2009, there's a leaked police report that comes out, and it talks about the fact that police had another suspect in one of the murders, and it was the lunch truck murders of Vargas and Roman in February of 2006. This was an African-American male by the name of Terry Wayne Smith. Apparently, Gibbs, he matched the description of the baseline killer. He also lived very close to where some of the baseline killer crime scenes were. And apparently Smith had a long, violent history of crime in both California and Arizona, aggravated assault, armed robbery. He was a suspect at one point in two homicide cases. Doesn't sound like he was a great guy. And he served prison time and was released not that long before the baseline killer attacks began. So I think what police thought was that maybe he was an accomplice. Maybe he was involved in some way, shape, or form. But I don't know how far they took it. Obviously, they were focused on Mark Goudeau, and rightfully so, based on the evidence they have. And he was also arrested just days after Goudeau was arrested. Now, it was on charges unrelated to the baseline killings. But why are we talking about this, Gibbs? Why are we talking about Terry Wayne Smith? It's because people think it's possible that he is actually the baseline killer. People have made those allegations. And I think the police themselves put together quite a bit of information on Terry Wayne Smith, even going as far as suggesting that, like we said, he could have been involved in the baseline killings. But they've also come out and said he was properly questioned and he was dismissed as a suspect. I think they also said that they figured out that he was in jail at the time of one of the murders.
So that makes it hard to be the sole killer in the baseline.
The problem is he overlaps Goudeau very much so, right? He's released from prison before the murders start. Goudeau is released from prison before the murders start. Obviously, there are no more baseline killings after the two are arrested. So I think that's why you have people saying, well, it could be him.
Sure.
The problem is, as far as I know, they don't have any DNA from the victims that match Terry Wayne Smith. And I think, well, I know they have his DNA.
Right.
He was in prison quite a number of times. Now, while he was in prison, Goudeau did an interview with the BBC. So let's hear a little bit of that and we'll talk about it.
Let's do it.
100% innocent, and I've been framed by the Phoenix Police Department Task Force. They needed someone. They needed someone. I was the perfect person living in the neighborhood. Oh, he's black. Oh, he's an ex-con. We use him. Ain't nobody gonna believe him because he's an ex-con. Felt like I'm underwater. I could see people standing there looking at me, but not throwing me a life jacket. They couldn't place a gun in my hand. They couldn't place no damn bullets or whatever in my hand. I had anything I wanted. House, two new cars, beautiful wife. The hell I'm gonna be out there raping and robbing people for $30, $40 for it.
So we're gonna hear from Goudeau again, but there in that interview, you know, basically what we said. He's denied his involvement in the baseline killings and essentially said, I had a great life. Yeah. Why did I need to go out and do this, this, and this?
Nice house, two new cars, beautiful wife.
We know of quite a few serial killers that had a pretty good life.
Yeah.
But they still chose to go out and commit sexual assaults, commit murders. I don't think that is a good defense for the I didn't do it.
Right.
You can think of somebody like Herb Baumeister.
Yeah.
Had all kinds of money.
Maybe just explain why. That's not your DNA that was found in places. And
that's kind of, well, according to him, right? If you believe him, he's saying that's all planted.
Yeah.
That's his way of explaining it. Goudeau's second trial for the baseline killings, it didn't start till 2011. You know, 4 years after his first trial, 5 years after he was arrested. It was a long trial. There was, I think, around 70 days of actual testimony. It lasted for, you know, many, many months. The prosecutor, Suzanne Cohen, she opened up the trial with a Bible verse. And it said, beware of the predator who comes to you dressed in sheep's clothing, but inside is a ravenous wolf with an appetite to rape. You shall know him by his deeds.
Powerful.
It is powerful. It's also going to be, the sheep's clothing is going to be a big thing in this trial. A lot of people are going to talk about it. Goudeau himself is going to say multiple times, I'm not a wolf in sheep's clothing. The prosecution had a forensic specialist who told the jury that Gudeau was undoubtedly the source of the male DNA found on the left breast of one of the victims.
Yeah, I mean, they were able to say that with it being 360 trillion times more likely that the DNA collected from the crime scene came from Gudeau rather than any other unrelated black male. I mean, that's huge. I mean, it's not 1 billion. It's not 500 billion. It's trillion.
360 trillion. That's...
Yeah. I mean, it's just... Come on.
The two sisters testified again at this second trial, as did a lot of the victims' relatives. I'm not going to go too much into the trial, Gibbs. I don't want to run too long on this episode.
Yeah, well, you're right, because...
There was a lot to it, a lot of evidence.
The defense is going to constantly challenge the DNA, saying it was mishandled, it wasn't collected right, this and that. They're going to, that's the one thing they hammer on.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of DNA evidence, right, introduced. And you're correct. The defense is saying, essentially, okay, you have this evidence, but you can't trust it because the work was sloppy. That's all they could do. Was tried to dispute the DNA testimony, you know, from the prosecution witnesses, but the prosecution had a survivor, a witness that testified in the trial. And that's usually pretty powerful. When you have a victim, they already had the two sisters, right? They had another witness that survived an attack by Gudeau testify against him. This was a 31-year-old woman who described to the jury how in May of 2006, Gudeau carjacked her near Baseline. He forced her at gunpoint to drive to a residential area. He made her take off her clothes while they were inside of her Volkswagen Beetle. And Gibbs, she said that he made her touch herself while he watched.
Yeah, and this scared her because she had a feeling he was going to rape her soon, and she was worried that she might die too.
Well, he told her as much, right? If she didn't perform the sexual acts that he wanted her to on him, he would kill her.
Yeah.
This is what she testified to.
And she says, but I said, you know what? I'm not going to do it. So go ahead and kill me.
Yeah. Specifically oral sex. She said, no, you're going to have to kill me because I'm not doing it.
But he kept on threatening her. Look, I'm going to blow your brains out. Your parents are going to read about you having your brains blown out tomorrow's paper if you don't give me oral sex.
But she still refused. And at one point, he pulled the trigger. But the gun didn't go off. It clicked.
So that was her opportunity. She heard the gun misfire. So she jumps out of the vehicle and starts running away. And she found the closest house trying to get help.
And you know this was extremely powerful testimony to the jury. You know it, Gibbs.
Well, here's the guy that said, I'm not the wolf in sheep's clothing. But guess what? She just confirmed, no, you are. You put a gun to me, made me drive you somewhere, made me take my clothes off, made me do things that I didn't want to do to myself, and then wanted me to do things to you. Thank goodness your gun didn't fire, and I was able to escape.
And in the process, had to run naked down the street to the closest house she could find. And it was on October 31st, 2011, the jury returned guilty verdicts on most of the charges, not all the charges. They did find Gudeau guilty on all the murder charges and most of the others. I think they found him not guilty on one count of armed robbery, one count of kidnapping, some counts of attempted armed robbery. In the grand scheme of things, it was...
They were going for the big one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was not that big a deal. There was one charge, I think, that they weren't able to reach a verdict on. So he's found guilty. Prior to sentencing, Gudeau addressed the jury.
I asked the judge to let me introduce myself to you guys. We didn't know exactly who you've been watching for the last 5 months. The only reason I'm standing here in front of you today is because of my past. I'm not proud of my past. Yesterday, you heard the word choice quite a few times. We do have choices. I made a choice in 1990, but then I corrected that choice. I went to prison. Changed my entire life. People can't change. I changed. Became a man. Got married. I got the right support group around me. Because I knew what it took in life. Got out of prison, I never looked back. Never accused nobody, never blamed anybody. Got a job, I went to work every day. As you all know, we can't talk about crimes that I have, or you guys found me guilty of. But I could look at each and every one of you in your eyes today and show you Mark Godot is no wolf in sheep clothing.
I told you it was used quite a bit, right? He's using the prosecutor's own words to say, nope, I'm not that.
Well, maybe instead of saying he's no wolf in sheep's clothing, maybe he's just saying, I'm just a wolf. I don't have the clothing on.
He's just a wolf.
He's just a wolf.
A wolf.
That's right.
Sorry.
You making fun of my way I say
no,
things.
No, I'm not making fun of it. Hey, if you want to call it a wolf, call it's it a wolf. Wolf.
It's a wolf.
A lot of people do.
Yeah.
That's not one of yours that I have a huge issue with.
No, there's much better ones.
There are. On November 30th, 2011, a Phoenix jury sentenced Godot to death on the murder charges related to the Baseline killings, but Godot didn't go quietly. In his first trial, he was really calm and low-key, even though he was convicted. In the beginning of this trial, pretty calm. Once he found out that he was convicted of 9 murders, he wasn't quite as quiet, and especially after they sentenced him to death.
For 10 months, you acted as a terrorist in our community.
I'm an innocent man. I did not commit these crimes. I had nothing to do with these crimes. I'm sorry, Yana. I'm very angry here.
My goal is not to make a parody of today, but simply to impose the sentence you deserve for each of your sneak attacks on folks.
Yeah, he wasn't too bad there, but I actually think he got a little more out of hand than what I was able to gather on tape. Now, Godot's wife, Wendy Carr, we haven't talked about her a whole lot. We did say that she's insisted he was innocent. And just like Mark, she has said pretty much from the beginning that Phoenix police planted all the evidence to frame her husband.
I don't understand how the absence of evidence is evidence. Yeah. Listen, these are people that made a rush to charge. I think they thought maybe Mark was the guy. And, you know, they repeatedly come to her house. Supposedly, they've missed it all this time. And according to the police, it was in a baggie, in a heel of the shoe, with the shoe protruding off the shelf. So, obviously, you know, I don't know how they think that could be believable.
But even if you exclude that.
The ring, obviously, is what she's talking
right.
about.
If you just exclude that. I mean, he was already found guilty of what he did to the two sisters.
Correct.
So, you know, he's not this good guy at all, right? I mean, he did terrible things to those two sisters. They have other DNA that's found on the white gym shoes and on the ski mask.
Well, I think the only way that he's not the Baseline killer is if every bit of DNA evidence related to him being the Baseline killer.
Right.
Right. Not the attack on the two girls.
Right.
But everything that comes after that was planted by police. That's the only way that he's not involved in these murders.
Well, I just think that's sexual assault. That's tough.
I think it's tough for anyone to believe that police would go to that extent.
They're going
to
come take your Nikes, plant two people's DNA on it.
Do I have to refer you to making a murderer? And how many people think that the police planted every bit of evidence in that case?
I just think it's a lot to do.
It is. It is. I mean, I don't know.
Saying that it's impossible.
Sure.
I just think it's a lot to try to walk away with saying, yeah, they planted the stuff on the shoes. They planted the stuff on the ski mask. They planted the ring up in the closet in the one shoe. They planted this. They planted that. It's just a lot.
Yeah. But could it be done? Probably.
Well, anything can be done.
Sure.
Yeah.
Several families of the victims have filed wrongful death suits against not only Godot, but his wife, against the city of Phoenix?
Well, I think some of them did that because they're saying, look, if you would have tested the DNA sooner than later, maybe my loved one would still be alive today.
But you would have arrested Mark Udo before he got to the point in his killings where he was able to kill my loved one, I think is the argument there. In June 2016, a unanimous decision by the Arizona Supreme Court rejected Gudeau's appeal, and he remains on death row. And unless some big bombshell comes out, Gibbs, that we're not aware of,
yeah,
I think he'll be there until he's executed.
Well, he's going to be there for life anyway at one point. So, and knowing how the system works, he'll probably be there for quite a long time.
That is true.
Yeah.
Because I read an article today about a man, I forget what state he's in, but he's 7 years old. And
he's 7 years old?
70. Sorry, did not come out right.
Yeah.
He was 70 years old. He was just executed. Took him 29 years.
Yeah.
To execute him.
I think it's a good chance Gudeau will die of natural causes before they complete his sentence of death.
They could. But if he's in prison for 29 years, he too would be about 70, 71 years old.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but that's it. That is the case of Mark Gudeau, the baseline killer. I'll say this, Gibbs. It's a strange case. Assuming Mark Gudeau is the baseline killer, as all of the DNA evidence and things point towards, and obviously the jury who heard all the testimony said, you know, that he was the baseline killer. He was one mean son of a bitch.
Yeah, rough.
I mean, gruesome.
It's a lot of carnage, man.
With a very high victim count. We got voicemails, Gibbs. You want to hear those?
Yeah, let's do voicemails.
Hi, guys. This is Brian from Little Rock, Arkansas. I discovered your podcast a couple months ago, and I've absolutely loved listening to it. Been binging it every day at work, nonstop. I would love it if I could hear y'all's thoughts on Curtis and Catherine Jones. It's a really unique story, and they've just been released from prison, and it's a sad, sad story, no matter how you look at it. I love hearing from y'all, and keep your own time ticking.
All right, Brian, we appreciate that.
Yeah.
That's actually gives a case that I'm not very familiar with, so we're going to have to look that up.
Check it out.
Yep.
Thank you for that.
Hi, Mike Squared. This is Rennell from Sydney, Australia. You sent me and my sisters an excellent parcel of goodies, so thank you. I'm about to send one to you, too. So, in Australia, we don't pronounce the letter R. We say R. So razor becomes razor, murder becomes murder. We shorten names here too, so Gibby and Ferg would fit right in. Stay safe and keep your own time ticking.
Oh, I love Ronel.
Oh, absolutely.
And in a bit of good timing, she probably left that voicemail 3 weeks ago, sent the package. It probably took 3 weeks to get here.
Yeah.
We just got the package.
Oh, we did?
Yeah. So in the mailbag, I'll just go ahead and say it now, after her voicemail, she sent us this, I mean, just a huge package, Gibbs, of stuff from Australia. She just called it everything Aussie.
Aussie?
Aussie.
Aussie.
And she made sure that I knew it was pronounced Aussie.
Aussie.
And not Aussie.
So Aussie.
It's definitely Aussie. But we're talking about pens, magnets, notepads,
kangaroo,
keychains,
kangaroo.
She didn't send a full kangaroo,
a baby kangaroo,
not a baby kangaroo.
No,
just all kinds of trinkets and cool stuff.
Koala bear
from Australia.
Little koala bear.
No koala bear. Oh. I think those are hard to get out of the country.
Probably wouldn't survive, would they? It's a long trip.
So thank you very much for that. We
appreciate awesome.
It.
Amazing.
Hey, Mike and Gibby, this is Christy from Florida. I don't know why I just left my last name. But I just wanted to call and say how much I love you guys. You guys are awesome. You've got me through many a day at work. I'm an accountant, and sometimes it can get a little boring. But so thank you for that. And also, I just wanted to say that that discussion about the eyeballs was just too much, but funny. So love you guys. Keep doing it and keep your own time ticking.
Hey, so she's an accountant.
Yeah.
She's got numbers in common with me.
Is she saying that accounting can be boring? Wow. I never heard that.
Staring at numbers and spreadsheets all day.
I know you love it, Gibbs. You're not technically an accountant, but you do a lot of
work. I like my TPS reports.
Yeah, your TPS reports are always late. I've been meaning to talk to you about that.
Yeah.
So obviously she's talking about the Puppin sisters.
Yeah.
And the gouging of the eyeballs.
I mean, that's pretty brutal. I mean,
it was brutal. And you kept talking about it.
Eyeballs.
And going very deep into the graphic details of how far around and back you would have to get to pop it out.
Pop it out. Man, good times.
Hey guys, this is your neighbor, Emily Moronis, in good old Huber Heights, Ohio. I just want to call and tell you how much I enjoy your podcast. I listen to it when I'm at work. Kind of helps me not think about the freezing cold or the super sticky hot weather we get here in Ohio because I work on a dock on a forklift all day. So it just kind of gets me through and helps me out. And then I had a suggestion because in all the podcasts that I listen to, no one has covered this. And you guys are my favorite. I think you do a great job. And that is the Green River Killer. He's the one that kind of got me into true crime back in the day after watching a Lifetime movie on him. And just sheer numbers alone, you know, there's a lot there. So I think that'd be an excellent one for you guys to cover. So hopefully I'll see you guys at CrimeCon. Stay safe and keep your own time ticking.
No, we love him. Emily was actually the one that she's the one that sent the custom tumblers.
Oh yeah.
The,
right from Huber Heights, though, huh?
Yeah, I didn't realize she was from Huber Heights.
Right there. I'm shopping at Meijer's in Huber Heights. I'm eating at Daroma's Italian Kitchen. Never seen you. Where you at?
You probably have, and you don't know.
Yeah.
All right. So I already talked about one thing we got in the bell bag. Our friend Lottie also sent us something.
Yeah.
She sent us this huge tin of real Danish butter cookies.
Ooh.
Which my daughters have eaten quite a few of them.
Oh.
So, but she also sent you a bobblehead. And I don't even know if bobblehead is the right way to define this thing.
It's like a spring-loaded person.
It's like a big coil with a huge round head on it.
Yeah.
So it does jump up and down. It does bobble, but it's a big coil. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's hard to describe.
It is hard to describe. I did a terrible job at it, but yeah. We love it. She also sent me some barley chips from Copenhagen.
Copenhagen.
So that's, but now she called the bobbleheads, I want to say she called it hop shittle.
You hop shittle you.
Or something like that. I don't.
What's she trying to say?
I don't read.
Such a hop shittle.
Danish very well or Dutch. So
you like that though. You're going to be like, you're such a hop shittle.
Yeah.
More, you're going to be like hop shittle.
I'm sure it wasn't anything like that, but my best guess is hop shittle.
Hop shittle.
So you have a hop shittle.
Like a little hop shittle.
And you
right
can
here.
Put that on your desk at work, yeah. Or you could put that in your kitchen. And
it's a hop shittle. It goes anywhere.
It does.
Yeah.
I mean, where wouldn't you want to have a hop shittle?
It's important to have a hop. Once you got a hop shittle, you always have a hop shittle.
That's true.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get the hop shittle out of here.
Yeah. And, let's move this hop shittle forward.
All right. That is it for another episode of True Crime All the Time. So from Mike
and Gibby,
stay safe and keep your own time ticking. Oh man, Gibbs, I forgot to respond to Emily's voicemail.
Oh.
I got so...
Oh, about the Green River.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, the Green River is just, the killer is fascinating to me, but, and this might be the reason why a lot of people don't want to cover it, it's so massive.
Yeah.
I don't know how you could do it justice in 2, 3, 4, I mean, episodes. Look, we just did 4 on
West Memphis.
West Memphis. I don't know how many it would take.
I mean, and Ed was 3, right?
Yeah. So if you were going to go through and literally go into detail about all the murders, if we did what we did on this episode.
Yeah.
But I don't know that that would be doing that case justice.
It's a pretty popular
case. It's very famous. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, gosh, I feel bad.
We've talked about it before.
We have.
We talked
about it. It's on the list. I'm fascinated by the case.
Yeah.
So,
well, hopefully we'll knock it out sometime this year. Yeah. Maybe.
Let's hope so.
Yeah.
We'll see. All right. I like your hop shittle, man.
It's a beautiful hop shittle.
It's one of the best hop shittles I've ever seen.
You're jealous of my hop shittle.
And I've seen a bunch.
Don't touch my hop shittle.
I'll take that hop shittle right away from you.
You don't touch another man's hop shittle.
Never.
Never.
Oh, shit, Gibbs. I left the recording on.
Oh. Why'd you do that?
Yeah, that's all right. We'll leave it on. People like it when we do that.
All right. Let it play.
All right.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.